Santana Adams in partnership with the Kentucky History Society and the Kentucky Oral History Commission on 3/29/2022 at 2:11 p.m. in the Keith Building on EKU's campus. Today I am speaking with
Cole Ballinger.
All right. Is there anything you don't want to talk about or any language that you prefer not be used around the topic? If so, you can just say that you prefer not to talk about this. Or are you ready to begin?
I'm ready to begin. Let's go.
All right. So if you wouldn't mind to restate your name, age, and birthplace.
My name is Cole Ballinger. I'm 21, and I was born in Climax, Kentucky, which is in Rockcastle County.
So what schools have you attended, and what is your level of current educational attainment?
For grade school, I went to Kingston Elementary in Berea. For middle school, I went to Rockcastle County Middle School. And high school, I went to RCHS, Rockcastle County High School. And now I'm currently a junior at Eastern Kentucky University, EKU, and I'm working on my bachelor's degree in broadcasting and electronic media with a minor in anthropology.
Right. And if you wouldn't mind to talk a little bit about your work history and your current occupation.
Growing up, my parents run a farm and a cattle business in Rockcastle County, so I grew up working in agriculture of all different kinds. Then afterwards, making money in high school, I did landscaping, mowing and weed eating, things like that, and I had a disabled grandfather while I was growing up, and that was my part-time job, was taking care of him. Currently, I work in the restaurant business. I've worked as a bartender and server at Cooper's here in Richmond, and I've worked at Cracker Barrel here in Richmond as well. That's where I currently work. I've been there for about 2 years now, and I've worked every position that is available for someone of my age and experience level at Cracker Barrel.
Okay. All right. So now to get into the topic, Black Lives Matter, we could start by talking about the locations that you participated in the protests for the summer of 2020. So where would that be at?
Well, in July of when, actually, side note, when was the Breonna Taylor, when did that shooting happen exactly? What was the date?
The exact date I don't have right offhand, but I know that this would have been late May, beginning of June of 2020.
Okay, yes, then it was early June of 2020 is when it was. It was in Richmond, right outside City Hall on Main Street. There was a large organization, large demonstration on a Saturday, and I went up there with a couple of friends because I felt strongly about the issue, and I felt like there was a lot more that we could be doing, so
okay.
Went there and protested.
That kind of answers my next question about the days that you participated. What amount of time would you estimate that you were on the ground for? And also, you had mentioned that you went with a group. About how big would have the group of people you went with then?
Two people.
Two people?
Well, with two friends. My roommate at the time and another close friend. We were there for probably about 2.5 hours, maybe three.
Okay.
There were people just milling about, staying 6 feet apart, socially distancing, for quite a while beforehand, and then the actual demonstrations started, and they lasted for probably about 1.5 hours or 2 hours.
Okay. So you mentioned that this was organized within Richmond. Were you part of organizing the protest, or did you just help organize, like, the two other people that you were going with, or how did you kind of find your way into the protest?
Well, I heard about it on social media, and the fact that the protest was going to take place was in the paper. So I had family talking about it, I had friends talking about it, and I saw it advertised, you know, by people on their Instagram stories, things like that. So I decided that I would get a couple close friends and we would come up here. So I was at, you know, on that day I'd been working on the farm. So I drove up to Richmond, met them at my apartment, and we walked downtown from where I live. And I didn't have any part in organizing the protest, or I didn't have any sort of administrative role with the protest. I made a sign and came out and showed my support for the movement.
So you mentioned that social media played a role, as well as like seeing some advertisements on local media. Which social media sources would you say? Oh, you're good. Which social media sources would you say were like had the most information? Where did you gather the most information about the protest from?
Instagram. Instagram has been probably the biggest activism center on the various social media platforms that people tend to use, and especially people of my age group are very active on Instagram, and that's the primary way that people spread information, like things such as events, and then also people spread different ideologies and views and opinions on different things that are happening primarily through Instagram.
Is that how you found out about the shooting of Breonna Taylor and her murder, or did you find out about this from like mainstream media, or where do you like first remember seeing that this was happening at?
Mainstream media. I read NPR every morning, and that was where I first heard about Breonna Taylor and the whole thing that happened with her. And then the Instagram posts and things like that, stories came, they came shortly after, and I was very aware of those at the time.
Makes sense. So what made you decide that protesting was necessary? What were your, like, your personal reasons for participating? I've heard a lot of people speak about, like, there was this, like, this spark or this moment when they realized that it was necessary. What was that for you?
Well, it made me angry as, first off, as a person, because such injustices were happening, but it also made me angry as a Kentuckian American and a taxpayer, because I did not support my tax dollars going to the covering up and the killing of, you know, marginalized groups in this country, and I saw it as wrong as soon as I read these things, and I realized that everyone has a place in fighting these injustices, not just the affected groups.
Okay, and so why was protesting your choice of taking a stand on it?
Well, I think that a trend was happening at the time that protests were the biggest reason that people were dealing with the things like the shootings of George Floyd and Breonna Taylor. And I saw solidarity in a lot of people, like I said, especially people of my age group, taking to the streets and actually physically doing something and showing their discontent with the system that allows such things to go on. Because in my head, an Instagram post is not enough. If we faced injustices in the face with just spreading awareness on social media, that's called slacktivism, and that just doesn't cut it. In order for real social and, you know, fundamental change to happen within a society, within a group, I believe that going to the streets is one of the best ways to, you know, counter these things.
Definitely. Did you have any reservations or hesitations in participating, seeing as, you know, in media we were seeing that the protests were becoming violent, or there were altercations with police or the National Guard? Did that have any effect on you wanting to participate?
It made me want to participate more.
Yeah.
I felt that those in Louisville and those all across the country at that who were engaging in, you know, these acts of vandalism and things like that, at the time and, you know, still now, I feel like a lot of those things were justified, and I wanted to see them firsthand from even with my personal beliefs set aside, I wanted to see them from a historical standpoint.
Mm-hmm. In your protesting, speaking of violence or looting or any of those things, did any of those things occur at the protest in which you participated?
Not at all. It was very peaceful. It was very well organized. And there was not the slightest whisper of any sort of violence at the Richmond protest.
Right. So as we know, COVID-19 had struck at this point. So how had COVID-19 impacted the way you were living your life in terms of work, in terms of school, and your social life?
Well, I couldn't see my family. That was right at the height of the pandemic, and I was living in Richmond, and I couldn't go and see my relatives back home in Rock Castle. I, at the time, was living with one other person, and everyone was staying away from one another. My life was pretty much lived in the inside of my apartment, and there was really not much going on. It seemed like the world had been at a complete standstill until people started taking to the streets to protest.
So how do you feel like protesting might have changed this pattern of isolation either during or after the protest? Do you feel like it had an effect on the way that we were participating in COVID?
I feel like people thought of it at the time as a necessary evil. I shouldn't say evil, because the protests were not an evil thing, but people said, you know, I think a lot of people in their minds said, oh, well, we should be socially distancing, and we will try our best at these protests to mask and to socially distance and to limit the amount of people that are indoors and hold all these protests out of doors. Where COVID is not as easily spread. It was in the middle of the summer heat, which, from what we understood at the time, was, you know, if you were outdoors, that minimized the amount of COVID that was spreading from person to person. And although no one claimed that these protests were safe, you know, completely COVID-free, as people, we saw the injustices that were happening, and we saw the corruption, and we saw the institutional racism that had been perpetuated in this country, and we said, well, if we don't take a stand now, we're never going to. We must go to the streets and protest these things with every precaution possible being used.
So you would say that it was kind of like a balancing act between the need of safety with COVID, but also, you know, a need to speak out about what was happening.
Exactly.
So, let's see, you kind of talked about this. Did you feel like you were putting yourself or others at risk because the COVID protocols were being broken? I know you kind of spoken about how everybody was masking and distancing, but was this an associated risk when you thought about going out?
You know, I really did. Afterwards, I even struggled with the guilt of actually being around a large group of people for the first time since the pandemic started, and I still don't know if I have the answers for, you know, where myself and the rest of the protesters, demonstrators lie on the moral gradient of things, because did the protests cause COVID to spread to vulnerable people and they ended up dying? Surely, yes. That probably did happen, and I'm sure that there is documented proof of that. So I don't think I have the answers yet, and I doubt I ever will, but I still hold the stance that it was necessary to protest.
So would you say that the continual death of people of color at the hands of police holds the same weight as the death of people during COVID? Like, almost it's become an inevitable thing in our country for people of color to die at the hands of police officers?
I think it's apples to oranges. The death of people of color to law enforcement officers in this country is something that is directly due to the malice and the lack of training of people in law enforcement positions and the people that died of COVID due to the protests of such violence. You could call it collateral damage, but I will not, because I understand the value of these people's lives as well.
Yep.
So I'm going to say that the answer is much more convoluted than, you know, than is easy to put into words.
Do you feel like at the time one was more preventable than the other?
I think they were both preventable. I think they were both preventable. At the start of the pandemic, our country and our president handled the early signs of the pandemic horrifically, and I think that at the very start of the pandemic, we could have weeded it out at its start, and COVID would not have ravaged our nation the way it did. Those deaths were preventable. The deaths of people of color, minorities, at the hands of police officers, very much preventable with legislation, with oversight, with more awareness that, you know, the problem is happening. And I think that the Breonna Taylor and George Floyd cases allowed people to become more aware of these things happening, and in turn has had an effect on how much that these instances take place.
So when you were going to this protest, did you know that you were going in the days before, or was this something that kind of happened in the moment, your decision to participate?
I knew that I was going. I had made my sign maybe 2 days prior. It was just a piece of cardboard that I had. And as a white man, I didn't know what to put on the sign. I had no idea what do I have in my brain that is so poignant that will cause people to reevaluate, you know, things about themselves and their society. And I drew a blank. I didn't know what to put on the poster at all. I struggled with figuring out what would be appropriate for a long time, and I eventually settled on just a simple love thy neighbor. So I held that up throughout the duration of the demonstration, and that's one of the bases of how I see the issue. If these cops had have loved their neighbor, then we wouldn't even be having this interview right now. These things wouldn't have happened. So that's what I settled on.
Where does that quote come from you? Like, what kind of place does love thy neighbor come from? Is there like an association around that phrase for you?
Well, it comes from the Bible, but I don't know if that's where it came from in my heart. I resonate with that because it's the most simple way to describe how I feel people should live their lives. That's the bare bones of it. Just love thy neighbor. And we won't have these inequalities and these travesties happen. But it originally came from the Bible, but it means so much more than that to me in my growing years.
Right. And so we kind of talked about a little bit about the days before the protest, but were there any other like major themes or feelings that were running through your brain when you were preparing yourself to go to the interview or to go to the protest?
I wanted to participate, but I never wanted any sort of spotlight or recognition, or I didn't want my name to be attached to it in any way, or my image, not because of embarrassment or that I didn't want people to know I was there. I'd be fine broadcasting it. I just felt that it wasn't my time. It wasn't my place. I am not personally affected by police brutality, and no one that I'm close to has been affected by police brutality. But I understand that there is a world that exists completely independent of me and the people I know. And these are my brothers and sisters, and the fact that they have been killed by an institution that is sworn to protect their lives rendered me seeing that I should go and protest. I felt the need to, and that's what I did.
So now more into getting more into a description of the crowd that day. What was it like during the protest within the crowd, and what do you think stuck out the most to you about participating in that crowd that day? If you wouldn't mind, maybe like a general size of how large the crowd was as well.
Well, there were hundreds there. Maybe nearing 1,000. I couldn't tell you exactly how many people were there, but it seemed like a sea of people, an absolute sea of people of all races, all demographics, all ages, all walks of life. It seemed that people were coming out of the woodworks. Everyone was there. Because I believe that there are a lot of good people out there, and there are a lot of people that don't stand for things like police brutality. And the thing that stuck with me the most, it resonates in my mind: no justice, no peace. That's a mantra or tagline that's linked to the unjust killing of Breonna Taylor in her home in Louisville, Kentucky. And I think that that's a good way of simplifying down exactly how a lot of people feel about the whole issue. If there's not going to be justice for the people that carried out these acts, then you can't expect the common man to be peaceful.
Would you say that this is the first large protest that you had participated in your life?
It's the only protest I've been to. Never been to another one since. But I'm very glad that I'd participated in that one. It was overall a positive response to a very negative thing that happened.
Definitely. And what would, so like maybe more in an emotional way, like what would you say like the crowd dynamic was?
People were angry. Mm-hmm. People at the beginning of the protest, before there were words and remarks by the people who run Richmond at City Hall, there was a walk down the street with people holding signs, chanting, and just making their presence known to everyone around them that they were not happy about the situation that had unfolded with Breonna Taylor and with George Floyd. People were very angry, actually. There were people screaming at the top of their lungs over this, and rightfully so. I was mad, too. You know, it made me very angry to read, you know, the things that had happened. And when I got to the protest, to me it seemed like it was an adequate space, it was an appropriate space to let that anger out towards the system. And everyone, you know, a lot of people who share the city in which I live, they also felt the same way. So it was a moment of solidarity between all races, all people, all types of people, and we shared anger, and we shared distrust, and we shared discontent with the way things have been run.
So I kind of have an added question, something that just popped into my mind. So I don't know if you are aware, there was a incident that happened a couple of years ago in Richmond in which a police officer was shot in the face on his entry into a home.
Officer 457, I believe.
Yes. Do you feel like that had any effect on people coming out to protest or choosing to protest or not? Thing is, I know that's something that hits really close to home for a lot of people who live and are from Richmond.
Well, yeah, when I was in high school, it happened. I was either a junior or a senior. I think I was a junior. And we all stepped out there, and we watched the motor brigade go by with the flags showing support of the family of the officer. I think his name was Ellis.
Mm-hmm.
that had been killed. And that was, that's a problem. And that was an injustice, and an evil man carried out that act. And I think that the difference in that and the Breonna Taylor, George Floyd, and the rest of the affected people of color was that the killing of the officer Ellis in Richmond was a senseless, violent act. He was doing his job, and from what I understand, he did his job well, and he was a good man. And he died in the face of, you know, someone that him and the system were trying to help, and that is a that's a tragedy. But the feeling of the protesters was that maybe that was more of an isolated incident, not to downplay the tragedy of it, but the killing of these people at the hands of the cops, it was a systematic injustice, and it was rooted in racism, and it was rooted in hundreds of years of casting certain groups in this country to the wayside.
So, you say there's a difference in that what happened in Richmond was isolated and what happened in Louisville was something that was occurring across the country.
Across the country, many times. And the thing that bothers me and bothers a lot of other people is that when they killed George Floyd, they classified it directly after as a medical death. George Floyd died because of a condition that he had, and when he was apprehended by the police, it was the condition, his medical condition, that caused him to die, which the cops knew that that wasn't the case, but they had this loophole that they could use in order to write his death off as something that wasn't due to the malice of police officers. How many more people have they done that to? How many people do they still do that to? George Floyd was one of many that were unjustly killed, and they tried to sweep it under the rug, but thankfully there was video evidence that a girl took on her phone that proved that that was not the case, that it was, you know, directly due to the knee of Derek Chauvin. And you don't know how many hundreds and how many thousands of people have met this same fate.
Definitely. As in preparation for the protest, did you receive any kind of training on how to protest safely or nonviolently?
No, I just went. I was aware that protests across the country were escalating into violence, but I never expected that out of Richmond. I never thought that I never foresaw any sort of real violence happening. And there was I was offered no training. There was no training given.
Would you say that you were seeing people on social media give some kind of nonviolent training or giving each other tips about how to protest safely?
Oh, I saw it. Yeah, I saw people talk about how if you got arrested while protesting, the best legal routes to take in order to get bailed out or in order to, you know, face prosecution. I saw a lot more of ways to protect yourself against law enforcement and against the judicial system. I also saw a lot of, prior to protesting, I saw a lot of COVID protection, strategies, and people reminding others to stay socially distant and to keep your mask on during the protest. There's no reason that anyone should have taken their mask off during the height of the COVID pandemic. And from what I saw during the protest, no one was messing around with COVID. People were staying very distanced and spread apart, stratified. Everyone kept their mask on.
So with, I know that there was mention of people getting harmed on the way home from protests, or just facing general issues from being a part of protests, and that was talked about as being part of the reason that people kept their mask on. Do you feel like that played any role in the use of masks as well, outside of the use it was being generally used for, like COVID?
Maybe that was a big thing in Louisville and other large cities. In Richmond, it didn't seem like it was that cataclysmic of, and you know, it would have been it wouldn't have been much of a concern to anyone. But you have to keep in mind that we were scared at this time. I think anyone can remember, anyone who lived during the pandemic, we were so fearful of COVID-19 and it spreading to ones that we loved, that most people were just trying to stay safe.
So then back to this idea of threats of violence or intimidation, was there anyone, whether it be police officer or resident of the area or anyone in the general location, that posed any threats of violence or tried to intimidate the crowd in any way?
You know, maybe I missed it, or maybe I wasn't perceiving it due to the energy of the crowd and the actual protesting, but I didn't see any counter-protesters. From what I understand, they were there at the Richmond protest. There were people who came out to protest against, you know, the protesters, the demonstrators, and the general Black Lives Matter movement, but I wasn't aware of any at the time. I think I saw a photo of a man with a sign that had some sort of anti-BLM rhetoric on it, but I didn't see it at the time, like I said.
Okay. All right. So next, how do you understand and value Breonna Taylor's life as well as her death? Was her death uniquely motivating in what way, and were other people's lives or death also meaningful to you? And we can kind of start with the first part of that question, where how do you understand and value her life?
Well, when I think of Breonna Taylor, I think of someone who was a steady part of her community.
Mm-hmm.
A good person is what people describe Breonna Taylor as. Mm-hmm. And I will take that as fact. Breonna Taylor was a good person, and she was killed by wholly incompetent law enforcement officials. They were acting out of fear, whereas they should not have been. They were acting out of incompetence and a lack of preparation. And the way I see it, a lot of these cops think that they're some kind of cowboys out here, and they think they can use vigilante justice and take the law into their own hands, and that is a spit in the face to the judicial system that exists within this country. There is no justice if someone is killed by a law enforcement officer because they are not able to face the courts, and it's that pure and simple. Breonna Taylor did nothing wrong. Breonna Taylor was laying in her bed after a long shift, and she was struck by a bullet, and it killed her.
So, in relation to this is something I've talked about in past interviews, and I just want to ask you, based on your memory, on what you have in your head, could you map out the events that happened that night in relation to her shooting? Like, what are you aware of happening that night?
And this might be wrong. There was a lot of hearsay about the instance, and as the events were unfolding in the following even weeks of her death, there were people saying various things happened that night. From what I understand, she was staying with a man who was a drug dealer, and the cops came to bust him, and before they even went into the apartment, they fired their weapons at a building adjacent to the apartment. They shot maybe twice, if not more times. out of, like I said, sheer incompetence and idiocy. They go in to Breonna Taylor's house without knocking. They barge in. There's a man that she's staying with who then fires upon the police. Mm-hmm. They fire back. He is not killed, but she is killed laying in the bed.
Do you remember how many times that the sources you have read or listened to, do you know how many times they said that she was shot?
How many times?
No, just asking you, do you remember?
I don't remember.
No recollection? Alright. I just know there's varying accounts of how many bullets were actually released into her during that time.
I do know that it was more than one.
More than one. Okay, and what did you say her state was upon entry of the apartment for the police? Was she up and walking about, moving, asleep?
From what I understand, she was just laying in the bed. She might have been awake, but she was not doing anything. She was shocked at the situation that she was put into, confused and scared.
So do you feel like her death was uniquely motivating, or were there like other events that happened before this that this just kind of worked as another catalyst into the movement?
Well, it brought things like this to light, for sure, and in the public consciousness, there was not a lot of awareness that law enforcement officers were killing people in this fashion. This was unknown in the zeitgeist of the American mind.
Mm-hmm.
Conversely, it also brought about the idea of Breonna's law and no-knock warrants.
Mm-hmm.
And the debate as to whether a no-knock warrant is constitutional, whether it is moral, whether it is right for agents or law enforcement people to come into a house without knocking, without making their presence known, in order to apprehend, you know, someone. It really mobilized a generation. I'm not saying that millennials or anyone else didn't have a part in the protest. That would be ridiculous to say, but my generation, Generation Z, this brought these injustices to the forefront of their minds.
So do you think that your perspectives are, like, so, you know, you kind of discussed how this was, like, really kind of, like, new to people that this was happening. Do you think that it was new to everyone or just new to white people?
I think it was just new to white people. That's a great point, because I think that where does the distrust of the police come from black people? It comes from years, decades of these sorts of things happening and being covered up. A lot of white people just didn't know that these things were happening, because there was no massive protest that had happened in recent years. I know there were a lot in the 1990s and the 80s.
Yeah.
But in the 2000s and 2010s, this issue had seemed to be, you know, not at the forefront of people's minds. Yes, the shootings of Breonna Taylor and George Floyd caused all people to foster this distrust of the executive law enforcement system rather than only minorities and people of color.
I asked that question specifically based on a past interview in which I interviewed a black man, and he spoke about people who try to memorize all the names of people who have died, people of color who have died at the hands of police brutality, and he had stated to me that at a certain point he just gave up because there were too many names to keep counting. So I think that that's an interesting thing to bring to light during this conversation. So I guess the next question is were you directly involved with BLM as in the organization, or any other major organizations as in donating, or just like any kind of back and forth with any major organizations?
No, I was never a part of Black Lives Matter. I was never a part of any organization. I was just a concerned citizen, truly. And there were many like me. I had no affiliation with any of these organizations.
Okay. So this might affect the next question. So how do you personally define or perceive the voice of BLM? Do you see them, their actions? We know in the news there's been a lot of discussions of things that have happened within that organization. Do you know anything about that, or do you feel as if their actions are applicable?
I see the BLM goal as just truly creating a sense of accountability within police departments. Cops should be held accountable for their actions. Body cams should be kept on at all times, and the fear of being fired should be in the hearts of all police officers. If they turn off their body camera at any time and don't establish complete transparency when carrying out the aspects of their job. A lot of people outside of BLM who may identify with BLM have called for the complete abolition of the police. And as someone who has spent a lot of time with people who oppose BLM, family members, friends, people from where I'm from, Rockcastle County, Kentucky. I mean, it's a very conservative place. They saw the notion of abolishing the police as the main tenet of Black Lives Matter. The main focus of the movement would be to abolish the police, and that is not true. That's not what the BLM movement has strived for. You know, at its roots, I think that there was a lot of misinformation put out by opposing institutions like Fox News, who made these crass statements saying that everyone who supports BLM or everyone who has shown solidarity with the Black community and victims like Breonna Taylor believe that we should abolish the police. That is ridiculous, and that is something that is a thought, and it's something that could be debated whether you know the police system has gone so far as to where it needs to be abolished. But I don't think anyone was directly calling for that en masse.
Do you feel like those people are maybe missing the point?
Which ones?
So do you feel like the people who, you know, thought that BLM's only goal was to completely abolish police, do you feel like they were missing the point of the movement?
I think they were missing the point, but they were also using the cries to abolish the police as a way to mask their racism and to mask their disdain for any change that would help out the lives of Black people and minorities and other affected groups. Because as soon as you can ridicule a movement or group, then you can dehumanize them and dehumanize their platform in any way that you see fit. As soon as you can lament on how ridiculous the notion of abolishing all law enforcement in the United States, as soon as you can, you know, as soon as you can talk against that, it's much, much easier to completely decry the entire movement and see the Black Lives Matter movement as something ridiculous or something that is an over exaggeration of things that have happened, which of course it is not.
Okay, so that moves nicely into the next question. So we heard a really common phrase throughout these protests. A lot of people have mentioned it, defund the police. So what does defunding the police mean to you specifically?
I've always understood it as a call for the police to have to prioritize their funds. Once you take away the funding from these police departments, they're forced to make a choice. Do we spend the little money that we have on things like militarization,
mm-hmm.
things like fully automatic weapons and military-style vehicles, or should we focus our money on doing the job, community outreach, actually helping people like law enforcement is supposed to do? And I see it as that once they're forced to prioritize their funding, they're going to realize, and they already have realized in many police departments across the United States and the world, that their priority is helping people and putting their funds towards constructive and positive things rather than militarization and things like that. A reallocation of funds is also something that people bring up. More training is what I think the root of the Black Lives Matter movement stresses, is that these police officers are coming directly out of even high school, given a few months of training, and they're sent out onto the streets to patrol and to enforce the law. Whereas in other nations, you have to have a 4-year degree to be a police officer, or you have to endure months and months and years of training and constant retraining and constant exercises in order to de-escalate a crisis when you're presented with it. Whereas in America, we do not fund this level of training. That is, that's not how it works. You can go and become a barber, and it takes you longer than it does to be a cop, you know?
Yeah.
So we need, the movement is asking to eliminate young, poorly trained police officers from carrying out their own actions of malice, you know, rather than serving the public good.
Mm-hmm. So, with you participating in this protest specifically, did this impact any of the relationships that you had with your family, your community, or your friends? Like, did you face any backlash for participating?
I did face backlash. I faced a good amount of backlash from family members. Quite a few family members. Because, like I said, they thought of these movements as radical, illogical movements that didn't hold any basis in reality, that we were asking for the police to be completely abolished and for anarchy in this country, and that's not what anyone is asking for. So I was ridiculed by many family members that I told that I went to the protest because of their staunch anti-BLM, anti-Antifa stances.
So now moving on to the media, how did the media's depictions of the events differ from your own view firsthand, if they did?
Well, I can't speak for any of the larger protests, but it seemed like when I would watch the news or watch a video of these protests, it was a war zone. It was complete anarchy, looting, pillaging, shooting, death, battery. These things were all happening. When often, from what I understand in these larger protests, those things were happening from the law enforcement officers. They were pepper spraying people. They were using tear gas. They were hitting people, using their riot shields to hurt people. And several people actually died at the hands of law enforcement during these protests. When I saw coverage of the protest in Richmond, I think that they did a pretty good job of detailing how it actually went. I don't think it was journalistic malpractice by any means. It was done in a really good way in Richmond, and RPD, Richmond Police Department, they were very open to the conversation. They had everyone in their department there during the protests, and they were standing in solidarity with the protesters. There were no officers. There were no representatives of law enforcement in Richmond that were standing in opposition of the protests. Because I think that anyone in their right mind who sees such tragedies happening at the hands of a government institution, anyone in their right mind would want to fix this problem or help in the fixing of this problem, especially law enforcement agents, especially them, because they're the ones being called out. And I think that the Richmond Police Department did a great job of taking that criticism and understanding that they are at the heart of this issue, along with the minorities that are repressed in this country. And like I said, they were a class act there at that protest, which is something that I was pleasantly surprised at. I didn't think that it would be... I thought there would be some sort of dynamic, some struggle there. But like I said, it was very commendable and respectable of the department to act the way they did.
Right. So when all this protesting was happening, what do you think that the outcome was going to be, or did you have an expected outcome?
The outcome, I didn't expect it to go so well. These things are still happening.
Mm-hmm.
We're not done. The movement's not done. And police brutality and these actions of inequality are still very much alive and happening in the United States. And it would be a disjustice to say that these things have ceased because of the Black Lives Matter movement, although we've made great leaps and strides within the social consciousness of people in America and people that I talk to. There, at the time, there were a lot of people speaking out against the movement, but I feel like as time's gone on, most people that I haven't, most people are going to say, yes, these are bad things that are happening. Something should be done about them. The discrepancy there lies in exactly what should be done in response to these things. But I feel like the movement in and of itself has made every American that's not living under a rock realize that police brutality happens, and police brutality is a much more common thing. And I think that the biggest problem, the thing that makes it an institutional problem, is that it's being covered up. These officers are not facing accountability for their actions. They're not being tried and convicted for their actions. And a lot of times, they don't even lose their job. They have to do some paperwork, and they might have a few weeks off or something. But before the George Floyd, Breonna Taylor, many others, before their, their wrongful deaths were brought to light, there were a lot of police officers that got away scot-free.
Mm-hmm. All right, that kind of answered my next question, which I'll go ahead and reiterate just in case there's anything else you feel like you want to add on that topic. And the question just goes along the lines of, how have your feelings about the protest and the goals of the movement changed since the summer of 2020? How do you feel about the protest today? And do you feel like the protest had an impact on your society? I know you covered some of that, but if there was anything else you wanted to add to that, you're welcome to.
people are a lot less racist these days.
Yeah.
I really think that it had a positive effect on people, where it made racism in the minds of people go from being something that people thought of. They thought of Jim Crow, they thought of segregation, they thought of slavery, and they thought of Emmett Till.
Mm-hmm.
And now when people think about racism and institutional racism in America, they think of Breonna Taylor. They think of something much more recent than a black and white picture from the past. They think of an iPhone video. They think of something that's happening in their backyard. They think of something that's happening in their own communities, rather than most people seeing racism as a thing of the past, something that was abolished by Abraham Lincoln, Martin Luther King Jr., and Barack Obama, you know?
Okay, so that covers all my questions. Are there any more thoughts that you would like to share or topics that you'd like to revisit? Or would you like to discuss anything that we haven't covered?
I'd like to talk about the possible restructuring of the law enforcement system in this country. Crisis devolution is something that's very important, and that it's not been stressed enough in the training of law enforcement officers.
Could you explain what that is?
Taking someone who, say, officers get a call and someone is under the influence of drugs or they're acting in a violent manner. Before this, brute force is applied to those people. Violent force is applied to those people. The cops would just beat somebody up, and that would happen all the time, and there would be no accountability for that. But really what we need is a team of professionals in every police department on standby, that when they get a call that someone is in a crisis, they go and they are trained in psychology and social work and things like that in order to, you know, help people reach a state in which they do not feel threatened, and they do not feel like their violence has any reason to escalate. De-escalation is very important. The use of lethal force should only be used when the lives of others are in direct danger. And the use of lethal force, as we know in this country, has been used in many instances when there is no danger present. And that's wrong. And I think that the protests did a good job of bringing those ideas to light. And I'm proud to have played a minor part in that, because I think that is a logical progression for our society to take, and it should have happened sooner. And if it did, we'd have a lot more people still walking around. But sadly, it didn't. All we can do is prevent these things from happening in the future. And I think there are a lot of people that that see this and are working to minimize the amount of instances like this that are going to happen in the future.
Okay.
It's been a cultural reset, almost.
Yeah, I definitely would agree with that. All right, well, is there anything else? Yeah. All right, well, thank you for letting me interview you.